If you go onto any news sites in South Africa, our local news sites, there seems to be a disproportionate amount of stories relating to aviation. And one of the big stories is, of course, the FlySafair strike. Definitely we need to talk about that because a lot of people have gone away. It's the school holidays, right? And people like to escape the cold weather and go to warmer climes around South Africa. So definitely I want to talk about that. But there's a crazy story about a man who boarded an international flight from OR Tambo with hand grenades in his luggage. These were not live hand grenades. But he wasn't stopped by security. That's the crazy bit. So I just sort of, and I actually need an expert to explain this to me like I'm a 5-year-old. And of course, there's only one expert, and that is Desmond Latham, who is the CEO of Frey Intermedia. No pressure, Des.
You must be kidding, Kathy.
Aviation expert. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me, and hello to all the listeners.
I have to tell you something. I was listening to your interview that you were doing a few weeks ago with Howard Feldman, and you're talking, well, it might have been a bit longer than a few weeks, and you were talking about the SAA strike and the way that you explained it and how the pilots had, you know, the media was kind of painting them as these charlatans. But the way that you unpacked it and you said, well, you know, when SAA was in trouble, they actually, they were meant to have, but they took lesser salaries, and you made it understandable to the 5-year-old in my brain. So I thought, well, let's see if we could do this again about what is the FlySafair strike about?
Two things. Mainly it's the amount of money the pilots are earning for the amount of time they're spending flying, in a nutshell. And the second is bad faith has developed in negotiations between the professional pilots union and the airline itself. So that's the two main principles that are going on here. Everything else in terms of the detail follows those two facts, essentially.
Do pilots generally get a fixed salary, or do they get paid according to the shifts?
They get most of them get fixed. They are contracted pilots that are contracted in and out based on surge periods and so on. But the way it works in the industry is a combination of the above. But majority of FlySafair pilots are fixed on an income. And with the RAND having weakened, you know, FlySafair pilots after a few thousand hours are headhunted by Qantas, Emirates and the rest. So with what they can offer, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a month, and there's no airline in South Africa can offer that level to a few thousand hour pilots. They can to their captains in certain instances, but because of the exchange rate. So what they're doing is they're relying on the pilots who've grown up, been trained here, you know, some of the highest skilled in the world for various reasons, as I explained to Howard, to remain here because of you know, tradition of being South African, essentially, without being nationalist about it. But, you know, the parents are here, the children at school here, and so on.
Our lives are here, but, and they're good lives,
And, you know, I've got friends flying in Qatar, for example, and other places, and there are big problems with those facilities. When you head off, especially the Middle Eastern airlines, it looks good because of the money, but, you know, you're far away from everyone you know.
Yeah.
And then there's a big cultural divide in terms of operations. So most of the pilots who go to Emirates work there for a number of years and end up going to Qantas or perhaps Lufthansa, perhaps, or into the U.S., you know, and a number now in Southeast Asia. So that's the essence of how the movement of pilots works. With a large proportion of our senior pilots in South Africa staying here and offering their skills to the next generation, I must say. So that's overall how it works generally in the industry.
When you say that there's this bad faith that's developed between the airlines and the pilots, what do you mean by that? What's happened?
Well, I mean, there were, for some time, FlySafair's pilots have brought to the attention of HR and the other executives inside FlySafair that the pressure of the operations is growing. And with the return to normal, inverted commas, flying post-COVID, there's been an escalation. So for many pilots, it was happiness after, 2022, 23, when we began getting back into the swing of normality, particularly in last year, 24. But there's been a concomitant growth in the actual hours flown. So they're expected to fly 65 hours a month, which is generally what most are doing. And it sounds like not much when you if I give you a figure of 120 hours as the maximum that pilots can fly,
right,
per month.
That really doesn't sound like a lot.
Well, it is and it isn't, because as I've explained before,
it's two flights to Australia.
Yeah, but there are three crew on those flights to Australia one way.
Okay.
So internal flights. So and then into that works a shift system. So you get different hours based on different times. So if you're flying 9 o'clock to say 5 in the morning, you will not work 65 hours. You'll work fewer hours because it's more stress on the body to operate in those times of day and night. Even though, you're going to try and get your 8 hour sleep and so on. There's 6 hour limits. I mean, 6 day limits. So we allowed 6 days in a row flying. Then we have to take the 7th day off. So there are limitations on the number of hours you may fly in total. There are rules about total number of hours. So in a 28-day period, say a month, 120 hours flight time max, but that's multi-operational. In other words, two pilots. In 3 months, there's a limitation of 300 hours. So over 90 days, you have 300 hours. In 1 year, you may not fly more than 1,000 hours. So... It looks at first glance as if fly safer pilots are not pushing the envelope there, but you definitely don't want your crew flying at those optimum numbers all the time.
I'm sure at some point it's going to start influencing safety.
Yeah, because as we always say, pilots get paid when things go wrong. That's where they earn their money. So when it's it's auto flying a lot of the time, you take off in the Boeing 737-800s, and very soon after takeoff, in many of the flights and many of the operations, standard procedures, you go to autopilot and then monitor after that. So the pilot kind of sits back, not quite sits back, but is monitoring the flight.
Yeah.
But when you fly into high thunderstorm activity, when things go wrong in the airport, you've got to think really quickly, and you don't want a pilot pushing the numbers, having to start problem solving at 31,000 feet, feeling tired and disheveled, and also having entered into bad faith negotiations with the airline. It makes, it creates psychological problems for pilots and stresses. So the essence of it is that, without going into the weeds too much, is that fly safe air, after the pilots threatened a strike, then locked the pilots out. Of work, basically, and stop talking to them. Then solidarity got involved, and the pilots will...
No, well, then it'll definitely end well.
Well, 2/3 of 75% of the pilots, apparently, according to solidarity, I haven't spoken to the pilots directly or the association about this, but it's about this specific thing. But it looks like many will actually stop flying today. So about 26, 27 flights are affected per day, roughly. Wow. If you go to FlySafair's website and their accounts, they're saying contact, check your flight details. So it is unstable at FlySafair at the moment. And the thing that really has created a lot more bad faith sentiment here about the owners is that there have been rumors, and I don't want to add to rumors, but I can say that it's publicly, it's been said, that some shares have been sold by some of the owners. There's two main owners of the airline who live most of the year in Ireland. They don't live in South Africa most of the time. It's a long story. So they're under investigation, as you know, by the aviation authorities here about ownership. 75% of South African airline has to be owned by South African citizens for strategic reasons. And it's linked to commerce and everything else. So this, because of how the diluted shareholding schemes have operated from Fly Safair, there are all sorts of things. We could spend 2 hours talking about it. So in a nutshell, the two main owners have been accused of dropping some shares this week. I can't confirm that.
Yeah.
They're not a listed company, so we're not. This is not shareholding commentary I'm making here. I'm just saying that you can see how bad faith has entered this with the the union solidarity, the union representative of some of the pilots getting involved.
Are pilots happy in general? Are pilots happy in general? I mean, I'm just thinking, planes flying themselves. It feels like they're overqualified. And who was ever happy working in a job that they're overqualified for?
No, I was being slightly mischievous by saying that they push buttons. They don't. It's very, very high skill. A lot of pilots I know and myself, we can be crabby because it's, if you deal with the top airline pilots, which I'm not, these are people who've spent millions of rands getting into the seat. They don't suffer fools because in the air, everything is about brevity.
Yes.
And extreme concise communication, and everything else is just flim flam. So when you talk to pilots, they can be a bit blunt because, when you confirm things, it's in staccato format. That's how we're used to talking in aviation,
sure,
in codes very quickly. So they generally don't suffer fools. So I can tell you quite categorically that a lot of pilots are not a lot of fun to sit with when they start complaining because there's the stresses of 270 people sitting behind you. If things go wrong, you're going to kill everyone, including yourself.
Yeah.
And that pressure is just, it's like the souls that you've got in your hands. You can't muck about with this. So the airline pilots tend to be quite blunt to deal with, and they're quite, and this has got SAA in some trouble, and the CAA and the authorities, the state-owned entities that deal with pilots like that, because they don't necessarily want to spend hours and hours talking to an official when they don't have a few minutes to get to the point. So generally feeling, but I'm not answering your question directly, other than to say that the pressures have gone up in tens, in multiples of 10 over the last 12 months for pilots.
How much flying do you personally do?
I do a couple of hours a month.
And what are you flying at the moment?
I fly a Cessna 172, something called a Cirrus tail draggers, which are tail wheel aeroplanes. That's generally what I do. I'm a general aviation pilot. No one pays me to fly.
Isn't that wonderful?
So that's... It is.
Isn't it nice that it's a hobby, that you can do it when you love it, and that it doesn't have to be your work?
It's a release from the world, the grips of the world, from gravity for a while. It is truly poetic, and it's an extraordinary sensation. And all of us who love aviation know about that side of it. So I never underestimate the importance of that and being able to do that in South Africa, which has got some of the best flying conditions in the world. And some of the best pilots. So, the people I'm flying with have extraordinary talent, and I'm learning all the time. I'm 63. I haven't been doing it that long. I started in 2008.
Amazing.
It was long enough, I guess. And you learn all the time. The big thing about aviation is it's lifetime commitment to learning. You're always tested. My last instructors testing me are literally less than half my age. You cannot have ego. You can't. If you're flying badly and someone who's 22 says you are and they're your instructor, you just say yes, sir, or ma'am.
Yeah, the other thing is it's a lifetime of work to pay for the lessons. Yes.
Yes, but we have to be moderate. Your lifestyle has to be moderate. It's not a place for people who are extremists. You don't
That's
live
true.
Long. There's a saying in flying that there's old pilots and bold pilots, but there's no old, bold pilots. And many of the young pilots I've met who are, show off the young zebra scenario die, to be quite blunt, because it's safer than driving, but it's much more dangerous if you mess around. And I'm afraid when you're 17 to 35, you spend a lot of time showing off to the opposite sex, let's say, or just showing off because you're testing your boundaries as a male, whatever it is, or as a female.
Yeah,
and those people generally, most of them, unfortunately, don't hang around for very long on this planet because Newton's laws are finite.
Desmond Latham, I really enjoy listening to what you have to say. and even more so when I get to speak with you. So thank you very, very much for sharing your insights, for explaining. Before I let you go, are you following the story about O.R. Tambo with the grenades?
Not really. But I'm going to have a closer look at it when you mentioned that. I'm going to double check that. But I'm not surprised because...
Really?
Well, I travel around the world and, you know, so I love being in South Africa because you don't get messed around at airports as you
well,
do.
Now
if
we
you
know
go to
why.
America, if you go to America, you're guilty before you, you know, guilty as charged as you are out there. They literally got cattle prods, you know, pressing against you. You can move you along a line. Yes. You get shouted at. You know, you're like rats inside a warren at JFK and so on, landing at Atlanta. You know, so the security there is intense because they face some severe incidents, as we all know.
Sure.
So we're pretty laid back. But I think a hand grenade is taking things a bit far.
Two.
Well, that's...
But they were training ones. So can we just... They were training. It was okay. No, it's terrible. I think there's going to be a commission of inquiry. I think this is going to be a massive, massive deal. So
well, the problem for us is that ICAO will start registering us as our airports as insecure. And then what will happen is we won't be able to... We'll have problems with international flights. So already at O.R. Tambo, if you go through O.R. Tambo to fly to the U.S., United Airlines, for example, which I fly, you get taken to a special place in security. You don't get the normal security. You get a special American security system that deals with you. These are people contracted in. It's not our people, if you like. It's their people. So already there's a layer there. If you fly Qantas, you get a special line that forms and you get searched a number of times. Your bag is emptied before you board the plane finally and so on. So you don't want to go to another layer here where because we are identified as having grenades and hand luggage and we're messing around security, if we're too lax, it's going to backfire on our travel. So it has to be sorted out.
Yeah. It's not only that. I mean, when the bag's going through... So my first question was, how did it get out? How did the story get from it being something that happened, you know, the guy left? He put it through the machines, the scanners, whatever, and... That was that. How did they find out about it? Why are we talking about it? How did it get to the media? And that in itself, I think, has a story.
I mean, I know that there are tests being done. But this is a different story you're talking about here.
Sorry. But it was discovered at Bole Airport in Addis. But it had come from South Africa in his hand luggage. So they picked it up in the international... the flight to Ethiopia, to Addis.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. It's we'll see what happens with this in the next few days, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, we know our luggage is x-rayed and the dogs pass over it to smell for explosives. If these grenades had no explosive charge and also detonators, but if it was without explosives and detonators, it's then two pieces of iron, basically, with a bit of steel in it.
Yeah.
And some copper that passed through. So if there was any explosive charge in it, the dogs should have picked it up. Anyway.
We'll see what happens, right?
Yes.
Desmond.
Watch the space, I suppose they say.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thanks for chatting to me. And we will catch up hopefully in the near future.
Thanks for having me, Kathy.
Thank you so much. Anytime. That's Desmond Latham, and very, very knowledgeable, very passionate about aviation. And who doesn't love guests that are passionate and knowledgeable, right? Not necessarily in that order. He is the CEO of Frey Intermedia, and he's an aviation expert, as you can hear.